if you knew you were enough? What would your life look like? What would love look like? This is the Enough Factor Broadcast, where we're redefining what makes you enough in life and in love. Now here's your host, Suzette Biernoff.
It's your girl, your life coach, and relationship solutionist, Suzette Biernoff. And we have a wonderful episode for you today. Joining me on the virtual stage is none other than relationship catalyst Mark Gordon. And I can't wait to talk to him. But first, I got to welcome my Enough Warriors out there who tune in each week. You are my reminders that what we're doing here matters. And if you are new, a hearty welcome. Out of all the wonderful podcasts out there that you could be listening to right now, you decided to listen to mine. And actually, that makes my heart smile. As you can guess from the name of the podcast, we're about your enough factor. Simply, it's the secret sauce of your enoughness. And with this podcast, we give you the tools and the permission to write your own definition by amplifying what I call three critical factors of enoughness. And that is your voice, your value, and your vision. By doing so, if we can amplify that, you can experience love and life in a brand new way. In fact, I suggest that you listen to season one's episode one, where I break it down further. But today, I'm so excited to deep dive into the heart of healthy relationships with Mark. I had the pleasure of talking to him about a week or so ago, and the conversation was so good. I said to him, Mark, this is the podcast. I feel like we need to be recording this. Well, you see, Mark is a relationship catalyst, and he has a strong desire to empower people, families, and organizations to become relationally, emotionally, and spiritually healthy. Simply, when Mark speaks, people listen and grow. He has been involved in community leadership, family coaching, and keynote speaking for more than 30 years, y'all. His passion for people is evident to anyone who experiences his speaking, writing, workshops, or coaching. His greatest success is his amazing family. He has been married to his wife, Sandy, for over 36 years. He has three grown children, two who are married, and one grandchild. So join me in welcoming Mark Gordon to the Enough Factor podcast. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Suzette. It's so great to be here. And hey, some news right out of the gate. Actually, there's two grandchildren now. My daughter had another baby since that was written. So that's great. Thank you so much.
Fantastic, Grandpa.
I know. I don't feel old enough to be a grandpa, but I guess I am.
I know. I don't feel old enough either. But you know what? That's good.
Yeah, exactly.
Good. Well, to start us off, I want to invite you into what I call truth and dare.
All right.
Now, the good news is it's not like the traditional truth or dare game, but the bad news is you don't get to decide.
All right. So don't lay it on me.
All right. So here goes. What is a truth that your relationship required you to see about yourself and dared you to take radical action on?
Wow, that's a good one. And that could be a whole podcast in itself.
I know, right?
You know what? It was a moment in time. I grew up in a family that was very strict and whatnot. And then when I got married, I got you know, it was a whole story around that. But when Sandy and I married, it was more because I got her pregnant. And I knew enough to know I needed to do the right thing by marrying her. Didn't know if I really loved her, whatever. And it was just a couple years in, and my son was very young. And I had this moment when I realized that I looked at him and he had these big crocodile tears in his eyes. Aww. And I realized that the world actually didn't revolve around me. Mm. And in that moment, I realized that all of the self, you know, pain, the sense of a fear of failure that I didn't measure up in some way, it all of a sudden made, I came to this truth or revelation that actually, by thinking that way, I was making it about myself. And when I looked at my relationships, I looked at how broken they were and how unhealthy they were. I realized it was because I placed myself in the center of the story rather than actually, you know, allowing other people to be at the center of that story. And I think having a child and seeing that little guy made me realize, wow, actually, he should be at the center of this story, not me. And so that was a wake up call.
I know that was those kids when they look up at you.
Yeah,
it can break you down.
I know. And so that was a moment when it was life changing for me, and it was just the beginning of a journey. But you know, I was steeped in addiction at the time, and I had a lot of not good things going on in my life, and I wasn't a very healthy person. And but it was the beginning. That was the catalyst that I started to seek out. There has to be more to this life. There has to be more than just me. And so that led to a journey of faith and healing that revolutionized our lives.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that just like life?
Mm-hmm.
It will shock you into position.
Yes.
You know, and then you got to figure out what happens after that. And you realize, oh, that life just put me in position so that I could follow the breadcrumbs to a greater purpose. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. You know, it's been so evident through the years when I speak with people and families that are in crisis, and you realize that, you know, I have a favorite saying. I say it a lot, and it's perception is reality, but it's not always actuality. And so our perception is very real to us, but it doesn't mean that it's truth. It doesn't mean that it's actual. And I find in relationships so often people, their perception is in error. And so they construct a whole belief system about someone else around that perception rather than the actual. And it was so damaging in my life. And then I've seen it damage a lot of others. And so, yeah. So to get to that truth, to get to that core, to get that to be shaken is to shake off anything that is not or should not be there, you know, and to allow that so that what's left standing is healthy.
Yeah, because I remember when we talked before, you were saying how so many people are trying to live somebody else's life. There are so many people trying to be somebody else.
Yeah, you know, for sure.
And yet they want real love and true partnership. You know, one of the things too, within the first 5 minutes of our initial conversation, because yes, listeners, Mark and I had a whole conversation before this that was just so juicy. It was about, you know, we were talking about how essential it is for women not only to work on themselves, because it's very easy when you work on yourself alone to think that you're the eighth of the seven world wonders, right? of good womanness. Like, you know, I'm a good woman. You think you're the eighth of the seven world wonders when you're alone. But the true test is your relationships, the mirror staring back at you, right?
So So true. And I, you know, it, when we get our value from someone else's opinion or someone else's actions or their behavior, it isn't a true reflection of what our value is. It's kind of a false hope if you think about it. And so when that shifts, when it changes, what happens is then we become unstable. And we can project to the world the strength, and we can project to the world that we've got it all together, but inside we're crumbling because we haven't discovered that our value doesn't come from others. The value comes from within us, and it comes because we were created with value, with exceptional love. And so that's when we start to realize that actually I have nothing to measure up to. I have nothing to compare myself to. That was a big thing in my life, is I was always comparing myself. Yeah. I always, because of that, I had this fear of failure rooted in my heart. I always was finding myself trying to live up to other people's expectations, and I couldn't do it. And so then I felt like a failure. And so I had to compensate for that somehow. I built a wall around my heart so that, you know, I didn't want anybody to see that fear. I didn't want them to see that heart. And so I had to build this facade so that nobody could see. And the problem with that, of course, is when I started to relate to my wife and others, close friends or my kids, if I start to relate to them, who are they getting to know? You know, who do they care about? Is it the fake me, the facade, or is it the real me? And I've come to the conclusion that if they don't love me for me, for who I am, then it's not love at all.
That's so true. And even as you're talking, I'm thinking about my own journey, because the truth of the matter is, like, you know, we kind of hear words now very, very often. Back then, hearing authenticity was not something that was regular. Yeah. But now I think we've gotten so used to that word. Yeah, that we kind of watered down what it really means. And there are a lot of people that they hear that and they think they're being authentic. They think they are. But can you speak to that deeper depth of authenticity that you had to find and that led to your work actually within relationships?
Yeah. That was, you know, I had this such a deep, you know, belief in my heart that I was a failure, that I didn't matter. Growing up, I heard things like, he was the accident. Just family jokes, you know, because I was 8 years behind my next brother up. And so I kind of came on by surprise, I would say.
Baby.
And so as a child, I can't emotionally process that. They're joking, and I'm sure they didn't mean anything by it, but I heard it enough. And then I heard, as I was growing up, because my parents were older, my mom was 41 when I was born, my dad is 43. So by the time I got into informative years and whatnot, they're in their 50s. And, you know, I heard all the time, well, you know, I wasn't good enough, or I didn't perform well enough. Their expectations were a lot higher, I think, because they had older kids and they, you know, I wasn't emotionally at the same place as they were. The other thing is, I grew up in an era, my dad was a minister, and I grew up in it and very strict, because I grew up in an era where if the minister's family wasn't in order, then you weren't qualified for ministry. And so there was this presentation that had to be made, that this is the perfect little family. And I couldn't live up to that expectation. I was kind of a hyper kid, and I was hyperactive, and I was squiggly. And I remember this one time, my dad is preaching and I'm sitting in a pew and I'm squiggling. And my mom used to pinch the inside of my thigh to get me to settle down. But this one time she just got a little too much skin and it really hurt. And I screamed out loud in the center of the church, "Ow!"
Oh, my God.
And I remember she grabbed me by the ear, hauled me all right in front of everybody, hauled me all the way to the back, because she always sat near the front. And, you know, and so I was there, and there was this particular coat closet they would make me stand in to like a kind of like the punishment corner, if you will. And this lady came up to me, And she pointed her finger at me. I was about 6 years old. And she pointed her finger at me. You are a disgrace to your father.
Wow.
And I remember as a child thinking to myself, you want to see disgrace? I'll show you disgrace. And something snapped, and you know the power of words? Something mm-hmm. snapped inside of me that said that I was not, you know, that I was a disgrace, that I would not measure up, that I would never measure up. And so I'm going to cause as much trouble as I possibly can. I'm going to prove you right that I'm an embarrassment. And that led me into many years of rebellion. I was very, angry. That this anger came inside of me that I couldn't control. And I got angry and I took it out on everyone around me and I destroyed all the relationships in my life. When I was 15, I ran away from home multiple times and the police would pick me up and take me back. And then finally, I was a couple of weeks before my 16th birthday, I told my parents, like, if you force me to stay, I'll leave when I'm legal age and you'll never see me again, or you can let me go. And they let me go. And I hitchhiked halfway across our country. And I remember from that moment on, I had made this vow internally that I couldn't let anybody ever see that fear of failure again. I did not want anybody to ever judge me and say that I was not enough. And so that was it for me, Suzette. I had this deep conviction within me that I wasn't enough, you know, mm-hmm. that I didn't have value. And so it was when I had that encounter of, you know, with God, for me, it was a faith in God. When I had that encounter and I realized that his love was unconditional and that he actually created me for a purpose. He actually, mm-hmm. I was on this earth for something. And so for me, when I came to that, when I realized that, it was like, okay, now what is that? What am I supposed to do? And through my healing journey is when I discovered and I started to see so clearly how relationships affect every area of life, how unhealthy relationships can affect. And I watched the cycle. I was a youth leader for many years. We had a youth center, and I watched these young people with no identity, with a crisis of identity, with no value, believing, and I saw the power of words with just a bit of affirmation, a little, you know, confirmation that they have value, that they have a purpose in their life, and I saw them come alive under those words, and then they'd go back to home, and they would, you know, which we used to kind of say the hell zone, and they'd go back to home and all this dysfunction, whatever. And I realized, you know what? I need to help their moms and dads. Their moms and dads are actually kids that never got an opportunity to develop healthy relationships. And so the cycle continues. And so I, from then on, committed my life to helping that.
And you even created a framework you were telling me about.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that stood out to me, I in my book Relationship Matters, I put this framework together. I recognized a few things, and I took the syllabus of building a house. If you want to build a house that's going to stand the test of time, to stand in the storms, you know, you want to have three critical things. You have to have a healthy foundation. You have to have a strong framework, and you have to have a sturdy roof. And so I saw this blueprint of healthy relationships through that lens and said, what is the healthy foundation look like? What are the five pillars? And basically I picked out five pillars to a healthy relationship. And that simply is trust, you know. That's one of the pillars. If you don't have trust in a relationship, you're not going to go very far. And by the way, when you have that internal battle and you have to be somebody you're not to present to the world, trust is already broken.
Wow.
Because you're not being authentic. You're not being real. And so the first pillar is already broken. So your relationship foundation is undermined right out of the gate. And then, of course, you know, communication is another one. Authenticity, being authentic, is another one. And then honesty. Honesty is a little different. You know, authenticity is being honest with yourself and who you are. honesty flows out of that because I don't have anything to hide. I don't have to lie. Can I just say, Susie, that I'm alarmed at how easily it is for many, many people, including myself in my healing journey, to just tell little white lies, to just not be honest, even by omission,
being dishonest. That's true.
By not saying what's going on in my heart, I'm actually being dishonest with my spouse. Like if I can't say how I'm feeling, then that's omission, that's dishonesty. And it breaks down that foundation of the relationship. And then the last one is, I think, is a lost art in our society. And boy, are you ever seeing it in the United States right now. And that is honor. Mm-hmm. I think society has forgotten honor. And if you don't have honor in a relationship, you know, honor is simply celebrating someone else, elevating someone else, and treating them with respect, not necessarily just because they've earned it, but because of their position. I often say honor is in my heart. It's not dependent on someone else. Mm-hmm. So if I have honor in my heart, I don't need to worry about how somebody else is acting. I'm going to honor them. So and I'll give you a great example of that as a teacher or even a police officer. You know, they've been given authority to do their jobs, but if they don't do it the right way, if they abuse that authority, then it's difficult to honor them. Let's face it, you know. Mm-hmm. However, we are to honor the position. And same thing with parents, like our moms and dads. You know, what I realized, a lot of my destruction, self-destruction came, I didn't honor my parents. Well, because I was mad at them. I was angry because of, you know, all kinds of things. But, you know, if I had honored them, then there's something inside me. When you can't honor someone else, there's something inside you that says I'm not honorable.
Yes.
And so I realized, wow, I need to honor their position. And that's where I started. When I started doing that, then we started having conversations and we got to the healing. We got the journey took us because I started to honor them. It opened dialogue up. And so you can see how that's such a strong foundation for any relationship. The next one, which I think is people don't think of, is the framework. In my, the epiphany I had around this is simply this. There's four parts to a good, solid framework. One is a vision, one's a mission, one's purpose, and one's values. You know, companies have vision statements and mission statements. Why don't families have vision and mission statements? Why don't individuals have vision and mission statements? So we started to look at that, and I started to work with families, and I started to help them. One of the healing parts of their family, when the family's in crisis, one of the journeys I started to help them is to set out a vision, mission, and to know their purpose, and then to set a set of family values that would help guide them in the storms of life. And it was astounding, the results. I'll tell a story to illustrate.
Sure,
this.
Sure.
This young man was about 8 years old. He went to an elementary school across from our organization. And I got a call from the principal one day, and he says, you know, Mark, he says, this family's in crisis. This young man, his behavior, he's like going to get kicked out of school if something doesn't change. Would you be willing to talk to him? And I said, well, absolutely. I'd love to do that. And so I started to work with this little guy and his family. And I realized that mom and dad really had an unhealthy relationship, and they were fighting all the time, and they couldn't agree on anything. And what the little boy would do in order to deflect their fighting is he would have a meltdown. He would have a temper tantrum. He would go into his room and just trash it. Like, he'd throw everything all over the place and kick the walls, and he would just like lose it. And of course, that little boy learned that that was the way that you deal with things when you're feeling nervous. And so, of course, at school, if something went wrong, he did the same thing. And that's what was taking place. As I worked with the family, we discovered that it was directionless. And I helped them, and I sat down, helped them do a vision statement, a mission statement, and set up their values. And I had the kids all involved. There's three kids in the family, and I had them make art, and we put the art up on the wall. So we created a vision statement for the family, a mission statement, and the values, and we put that up on their dining room wall. And I encourage them every day before supper, just read those out. So they did this, and we started to see some change. That little boy didn't have meltdowns anymore. One day, mom and dad are fighting, and it's starting to escalate. And the little boy, who used to go and have a temper tantrum, walked into the kitchen, took mom's hand and dad's hand, and walked them into the dining room, pointed at the wall to the poster, and walked away.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And this little boy was communicating to them without words that, hey, this is what our family standard is. Why are you doing what you're doing right now?
And you know what I love about that is the accountability piece.
Yes.
Because it's got to be not just a commitment to doing the work of writing and establishing, but that you have a pact together to hold each other accountable without there being any retaliation.
Yep. It's an agreement.
It's an agreement.
In fact, I had each person in the family sign that poster so that it became a contract. And you know, it started to pull the family in the same direction where they couldn't get agreement before. All they had to do is look at the vision and mission statement. They become riverbanks to keep you flowing in the same direction. You know, I liken it to if you jumped in, each individual in the family jumps in a dinghy and they get put in the ocean, the currents will drift, pull them apart, and they'll begin to drift apart. How many times have we heard people say, well, our relationship just drifted apart. We don't love each other anymore. Well, that's because they weren't pulling in the same direction. Mm-hmm. And so the vision and mission create a current so that you can move in the same direction. And the purpose and the values are the water in that river. The water, like the purpose is like, why are we a family? I thought, wow, isn't that an interesting question? That was a hard one for me when I when I realized this. It's like, well, why are we a family? Well, why was our family established? Well, it was established on love. So if we establish it in love, then where is that love going? How is it expressed? And so this becomes all part of the framework, you know, discovering your love languages, learning about strength-based language, how you speak to each other with strength. And that all becomes part of this framework. And then the last part, the last section is which I love, is the roof. Or should I say, I'm Canadian, so I say roof, but roof. the rough. Anyway, you know, what is that? Well, you know, you need a roof on your home if you're going to be protected by it from the elements of life, right? Mm-hmm. And I liken the roof to authority. If you understand authority and you have accountability and authority in your life, you are going to protect a lot of things in your life. That accountability you've talked about. And so the roof, in my opinion, is just a covering. It's inviting people, inviting, maybe it's your church, maybe it's a community group, maybe it's even your extended family or could be close friends, but you invite them to speak into the life of your family, into the life of your relationships. And you invite them to challenge you when they're not seeing you live out that vision and mission. And you, and then you give them permission to challenge you in that. And that's where it comes into a relational authority. You see, positional authority has a certain strength to it, but relational authority. You know, I used to teach workshops in schools, and one was called the Heroes Program. And I could walk into a classroom, and within 5 minutes, I could tell you whether that teacher had connection with those kids or not, whether they were a good teacher, whether those kids were going to learn from them. Because, you know, when you see relational authority happening, when the teacher, you know, they have authority because they're the teacher in the classroom, but when they take the time to build relationship with those kids, when they take the time to invest in that relationship, those relationships, those kids are going to want to learn, not because they're in a position of a teacher, but because they connect with that teacher. Mm-hmm. And I always tell parents, connect before you direct.
Yes.
And so you want to be able to do that. And so authority in our lives protects us. And that was the one thing, boy, in my life, one of the greatest outcomes of my pain was rebelling against authority. But what I didn't realize is I was actually hurting myself because I didn't have anybody that I allowed to speak into my life. And so putting that framework together, putting the healthy foundation, that framework of having vision, mission, and values, and then having accountability to live them out, you will have, that's a blueprint for healthy relationships in your home, in your organization, wherever you are. If you apply those principles, you're going to have a very healthy culture. And that's my passion. I want to see families and organizations have a healthy culture, relational culture in their homes.
Oh my God. And I'm so glad that you explained all of it. Cause when we had our other conversation, you talked about it and I just, oh my God, it was just like, oh my, this is so good. This is so good. But this is the thing. How does that apply? Cause I know there are listeners and the mm-hmm. main people that I interact with are women who are looking for true love and true partnership.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how would that framework guide them in determining if this man is the right one to invest in or whether they need to pump the brakes?
Fantastic question. Fantastic question. I go back to the healthy foundation. Dr. Henry Cloud wrote a book called Boundaries. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but he uses an illustration in it that says this. He says, when you're starting a relationship, think of it as a home. Often we invite people right into the house, just open, swing the front door open, come on in. And a lot of times when we feel lonely inside, when we feel disconnected, when we are longing for companionship, we'll swing that door open too quickly. And so what we need to do is we need to actually start at the gate, the fence, the gate, and talk to somebody over the gate for a while, over the fence for a little bit, and see how they treat you. Think of those five pillars that I talked about. If they're not trustworthy, how are they treating other people? Are they trustworthy in their career? Are they trustworthy in other relationships? If they're not, they're not going to be trustworthy with you. They're not going to be, are they being honest with you? If there's little white lies, if there's little signs that they're not being completely transparent, you know, the word intimacy, I slow it down and say, into me, you see.
Yeah.
If someone's not being transparent or authentic, they can't, if they're not authentic, they can't be transparent. And so I often say, like, if somebody has to be something they're not to make you like them, then who are you liking? And so one thing, you want to slow down the process. So one thing that could really help, and especially the ladies that you're helping, is to recognize and to filter that interaction, whether it's dates, whether it's, you know, are they honorable? How did they treat the waitress? How did they treat that server? Did they kind of not make eye contact with them? Did they treat them like they were beneath them in some way? Because if they are treating the least of these poorly, they're going to probably treat you poorly at some point. Yeah. Now, nobody's perfect, Suzette. Right. We all know that. But I'm saying if they could take that measurement, if they could take that and say, you know what, is this person trustworthy? Is this person communicating well? Are they saying what they mean and meaning what they say? Do they follow through on a promise?
Yes. You know, when you were talking, I literally got a picture in my mind of the gate being in front of the house. And somebody passes by and says, "Hey, how you doing?" You say, "Fine, how are you?" And you kind of engage in a little, right. I see you have flowers there. Yeah. Well, I grow flowers too. You do. You know, so you're kind of casually talking. Now, it's a different thing if that person says, after you kind of casually talk, they say, what if we meet here tomorrow? Maybe lunchtime, I can meet you here tomorrow and we can talk about so-and-so-and-so. So then you start saying, okay, casually it was fine, but now they've said they're going to meet me at a certain time.
Yeah.
So now I'm like, are they there at 12 or there at the lunchtime? Right. You know, I came because of the invitation. I'm right here at the gate. But were they early because they were excited about talking and they wanted, you know, or did they kind of come in and say, oh, they were casual about it, or they didn't show up at all?
Yeah.
And then gave you a reason why they didn't come. And before you let them off the hook or write them off, you see if the next time they're on time.
Right.
You know, and I think, and I love that gate, because if we treated relationships like having a conversation over the gate first, we got to get familiar with each other before I invite you into my house. That's a whole different thing.
There's actually another step between, Suzette, and that is once you've established a little connection over the gate, you can open the gate and invite them into the yard. And you could sit on the swing in the yard, or you could stand in the yard for a little bit and find out how they treat you in the yard. Maybe that's in that illustration, maybe it's a few dates, maybe it's an event of some sort you go to. But here's the thing in your illustration. When they came in the gate, did they step on those flowers that they admired? Did they care about where they were stepping as they came into your yard?
Mark, wait a minute. Hold on. I got to breathe on that one.
Yeah.
Ooh, that was good. Yes.
How do they treat the yard? If they're not going to treat the yard well, don't invite them into the living room.
Did they come in with their sandwich?
Right.
And threw the paper down on your yard?
Right.
Yeah. How do they treat your yard? How do they treat your
Or
flowers?
How about you watch them walk away from the fence? You're at the gate and you walk them watch away and you walk them, you see them walk by the next neighbors and they stepped on their flowers.
Or
you observed how did they keep their yard? You know, you may want to see, hey, what, get a little insight into their lives. Watch how they treat others. You know, how are they treating other people's yards? And you know, I find a lot of people, please, I'm a man, so don't take this the wrong way. But in my work, what I hear mostly from women is they overlooked some of the warning signs. In fact, I can't tell you how many times people have told me, I actually saw the red flags, but I ignored them. I even had a friend point it out, and I wrecked a friendship because I didn't like what they were saying to me. Mm-hmm. If you have that kind of drive where you can't listen and hear that advice, or to stop for a minute. Now, that red flag may not be a necessarily a stop sign. Maybe it's just a yellow light. Maybe it's a cautionary one. And maybe there's a couple of things you need to talk through and work through and be authentic yourself and say, you know, this is making me nervous and I'd like to talk about it. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes when you get through a couple of little conflicts, it actually deepens your relationship, because you get to some truth that's under the layers. But if you rush, and I always say authentic people are okay with taking their time.
Yes.
Authentic people are not insecure, so they don't worry about whether or not they're going to keep you or not, or they're going to, you know, for men, you know, it's transactional in a lot of ways. It's conquest, you know. They're attracted to this woman. They pursue her and they do things they wouldn't necessarily normally do
right
to win her. But then do we keep doing those things to keep winning?
Yes. And then
like,
even
I'm married 37 years and I'm still trying to win my wife.
Yeah. Because right? I think the power that women hold, they don't know they hold.
Oh, yes.
Is that space of authenticity.
Yes.
They don't have to argue with you. They don't have to threaten you. They don't have to do anything. All their commitment is to them showing up fully and really and honestly. If you're committed to you, then that person, what they do or don't do, is of no consequence. You know, it's like, okay, well, he said he was going to call, but he didn't call me for 3 weeks. What does that mean? If your commitment and your focus is most on you being true to you, his reasons don't matter. You check in with yourself and say, well, do I want to be with somebody yeah. who says they're going to call me tomorrow, and I don't hear from them for 3 weeks. It's right. not about them. It's about mm-hmm. your commitment to you. And I tell my coaching clients,
yes.
when they come to me with all the things that he did, I say, the problem isn't with him. The problem is you're not clear about you.
Yes.
You're yeah. not clear about your self-value. You're not clear about your own definition.
So true. So true. Because if we're not, if you know, I find that if you don't approach that relationship from a place that you have value, you will let somebody else mistreat you because oh, yes. you don't think you're valuable. You're going to allow, you know, I have so self-esteem is what you feel about yourself. Self-image is how you see yourself. Self-dignity is how you treat yourself. If you don't feel good about yourself, you're not going to see yourself in the right light, and you're not going to treat yourself well. And I think sometimes people don't realize that not treating yourself well means allowing someone else to treat you poorly. That's not treating yourself well. That's self-dignity is a problem then. And so I often encourage people, if you want to change how you feel about yourself and how you you need to change how you see yourself, and you need to see yourself as valuable, then you'll start to feel valuable. And then your self-dignity will kick in and you'll start to treat yourself well, which means you're not going to let anyone treat you unwell.
That's so true, Mark, because I remember when the transition happened for me, because I was a magnet for unavailable men for most of my adult life. And I was a late bloomer because the dots didn't start connecting till I hit my mid to late 40s. And mm-hmm. I remember when the change happened. I remember specifically I was 49 staring at 50 looming in the distance. And I remember, you know, having the same kind of relationship, internal conversations and whatever that you have. And I remember something stood up in me and said, I'm not going out like that. I am not going to have spent my entire life as I approach 50, not knowing what true love feels like. I'm not going to live my whole earthly life running after it and never having it. And that it wasn't something somebody said, something inside of me said this far, no further. And that was when I made a commitment to date authentically, because I said, I'm going to be myself. I'm going to bring my true self to the table so they know what they're getting. Yeah. I'm bringing my true self to the table, because I had read this book about dating authentically and that how we women show up as different personifications of ourselves. We're Miss Critical. We're Miss Perfectionism. We're Miss This. We're Miss That. And that we
so
don't
do men,
bring
by the way.
Yeah. And we don't bring our real selves. And so I had to respect myself for being courageous enough to stand in my truth and to respect the woman I had become. And when I realized, well, you know what? I respect her.
Oh, good.
And it came to the point I refuse to bring anybody else. Mm. So that goes to your point. When you have self-dignity, you know, the way you see yourself changes, then it will change.
Yes.
How you show up in the world, how you show up on that day, it changes it. It doesn't make you harsh. It just means you don't need validation. You don't need external validation.
That's right.
You already have validated yourself by saying, you know what? I respect this journey. I respect going to the therapist and dealing with anger distortions.
Yeah.
I respect that I decided that my son was not going to have a lot of uncles, that I had a standard, and I respected him too much to have men coming in and out of my house. I respect those things. I respect that I walked away from relationships that could not respect me as me. Mm. I did that in other relationships. Why not do it in relationships, in romantic ones?
Right.
It was my integrity. Every time I chose integrity with myself, my self-value went up.
Exactly. Exactly. See, I think, Suzette, a lot of people struggle thinking they believe if they admit their faults, if they admit the parts of them that they don't like, if they admit that they're there, somehow it's going to devalue them. And I always tell people those things aren't the things that define you. What defines you is your choice on what you're going to do with those things. So for me, I when I had the self-awareness to realize that my anger was to protect myself, I put this wall around my heart of anger to protect that part of me, I realized the only way that I could actually overcome that and be authentic is to actually admit the pain that I had. And I had to admit the parts that I played in that pain. And what I discovered was actually that didn't make me less valuable. It made me more valuable. It actually built confidence in me. It built authenticity in me because now I don't worry about what other people think of me. I don't have anything inside me anymore that can be leveraged. I often say, you know, anything that's in there that's a secret or that is destructive, it can be leveraged to use against you in a relationship. And you want to remove the leverages. And so by removing those leverages like you did, now you were free to be authentic and you were free to be who you are. And it's interesting, you let go of, you know, in a sense, you were letting go of that ideal of having a true love. And as soon as you, and became who you were, guess what? Then your husband was attracted to that part of you, which is the real part of you.
Yeah,
and you found true love.
Exactly. It's like I became true love.
Yes.
Instead of looking for true love.
Right.
I became true love.
Yeah. And that is because instead of looking for someone else to give you that value, like we said right off the top, you have believe that value. You've decided that you have value. And you know, you said a few things that were very interesting to me that, you know, you started to look for the fruit in your life instead of looking at the negatives in your life. And I believe every single person has value. And I believe every single person, you know, brings and adds value to this world, to others. And if people could just shift their focus to those that as small as the fruit might be, it might be the smallest of seeds, a mustard seed. If you looked at that and started watering that rather than watering the negative, that's what's going to grow. It's like where you look is where you walk. Mm. And so if you know, I remember in my addiction recovery, and then now I've helped many others through it. I always tell them, don't make your goal to be drug-free or alcohol-free, because all you're going to do is keep looking at alcohol and drugs to try and beat it, to overcome it. You're just going to keep in the wrestling match. You're going to keep relapsing. Look beyond that to your purpose. Look to what you want to accomplish in life. And you start to look there and walking there. Then when the addiction comes up or the temptation comes up, you're going to knock it to the side and say, no, I'm sorry, alcohol. I'm actually moving this way. I don't need you anymore. And that is such an empowerment. So if you apply that principle to relationships, it's so powerful because I know that I have value and I can add value and I'm going to bring what I have to the table. Mm. And when I do that and I'm present, boy, I tell you, it changes everything.
Doesn't it? It changes everything. And even when you were talking about the workshops that you did, at agencies that get women out of sex trade.
Yeah.
And you were saying that a major red flag that you made them aware of is men being in a hurry.
That's right.
Can you talk about that? Because I know the women listening, we've been socialized to romanticize that as, oh man, he already told me he loved me. It's because, you know, they tell you that when a man finds the woman that he wants, it doesn't take him a long time. So we romanticize things that we should be like, oh, hold up.
Yeah, exactly.
You just met me last week.
yeah, exactly.
Right?
Well, listen, a huge driver in many men, and, you know, I'm speaking generally, but in many men, insecurity is a huge piece. And they want to be seen as strong. They want to be seen as in charge. But it comes out of insecurity. And someone who's insecure is always in a hurry. They're always rushing because they think that at any moment you might see the real them and dump you, and before you get what your goals are. And so men who are insecure will put on a bravado or a some of that charisma that you speak of is actually not real. In fact, I often tell people the most lively person in the room, or the person that's got the center of attention in a party, at a party, whatever, is usually the most lonely and insecure person that's there. Because it's a facade. They're projecting that out. And only through time can you discover whether what is real and what is not real. How do they act when they're with you alone versus how they act with you in a crowd is one way you can see it. And of course, the old one is all, and it's true, but it's become cliche, but how do they treat their mom? But here's the one I've added. How do they treat their dad? Because their moms, a lot of times, men are mama's boys, so they might treat their mom. A lot of people take, that saying, how do they treat their mom, and say, well, are they nice to them? Are they kind to them? Whatever. But you also got to look further than that. Can they make a decision without mommy?
Yes.
Can they leave mommy for and do something with you without permission from mommy? It goes way beyond just how they treat them. It's how dependent are they on them? Because if a man is dependent on mom, they're going to be dependent on you. Mm-hmm. And you don't want, I always break it up. You don't want codependence and you don't want independence. You want interdependence. That means I'm strong. I know my value. My wife, Sandy, knows her value, and she's a strong woman. But we've chosen to come together because we love each other, mm-hmm. because we have something to give to one another. And so interdependence is, I love that we get to be connected. I love that we are married. I love that we can be together, and we're going to do great things together and achieve great things. But codependence is, I can't, live without you. Mm-hmm. And a man that is insecure, who is moving too quickly, will actually show a lot of controlling things within the marriage later, mm-hmm. because they want to control the narrative. They want to control the pace. Then probably they're going to want to control the marriage, and that's a red sign. Now it's not necessarily a deal killer, but it's certainly worth having a conversation before you give your whole heart.
Yeah.
Certainly before you give your body.
Yeah. You kind of want to work that thing out, if necessary, work it out in therapy together before you make a permanent decision.
Yeah. Yeah. So, for men that, like I said, authentic people don't mind taking their time. They're going to want you to feel secure, ladies. They're going to want you to feel safe. And they're going to take their time, and they're going to be gentlemen about it. They're going to think of the five pillars. They're going to be honorable. They're going to treat others with honor. They're going to treat you with honor. So they're not going to push you into things you don't want to do, that you're not ready to do. And so, and then they're going to obviously be honest. They're going to be trustworthy. They're going to be authentic. And they're going to, men aren't the best at communicating the touchy-feely stuff. That's a generalized statement again, but it is true that a lot of men are not necessarily connected or with their emotions, and their emotions. The problem with turning emotions off is that you turn all the good ones off too. So,
true.
Sometimes men trying to control the anger will turn off all emotions, and then they're disconnected. They're not emotionally available, as you said. And so those are things to be looking for. And to be assessing as you go along. But a man who is secure in who they are, that knows their value, that is genuinely ready to have a lasting relationship, ready to, a lot of people say it's 50-50. I always say, no, it's 100-100.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
When they're ready to give 100% of themselves to you, the signs will be there. You're going to see those kinds of signs. They're going to be patient. They're going to be, you know, they will communicate and, or at least admit, I don't know how to express this, you know? And so I'm trying to tell you what I'm feeling, you know, they'll listen to understand rather than, you know, get defensive. An insecure person will get defensive if you try and bring up an issue. It could be something as simple or complex, but if you're trying to, ladies, if you're trying to bring something up and they just don't want to go there, or they get defensive, like, what are you accusing me of? They get all defensive. That is a sign of insecurity, that they're not secure in who they are. Because if you bring up something that I'm doing that is bothering you, I'm sending the wrong relational message your way. I want to know that from my wife. I want people and I'm in relationship with to tell me that. I want them to say, hey, you know, you're sending a relational message here that is kind of hurting me. And it's causing some angst in me. And so, oh yeah, that's not my intent. I don't want to send that message. Let's talk that out, right?
Yeah.
But if I'm insecure, if I'm I'll use bravado, I'll use charisma, you know, I'll make it light or a joke or to get pass it off, or I will get angry and I'll get controlling. And whenever you see signs like that, where you're being told what you can and can't do, or who you can or cannot talk to, those are warning signs.
Mm-hmm. And then I was thinking too, the flip side, ladies, for those of you who are in a hurry, a good man is not going to let you rush them either.
That's right. Yes. Really good. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you are in a hurry, you have to ask yourself, why am I in a hurry?
Exactly.
Yeah. Like why am I so insecure about this? Exactly. And you might have something you need to work on in your own heart. Get a coach or a call Suzette. And let her help you.
If you can't get one, you. Call the other.
Yeah. Can you imagine that poor person if they got both of us on a call?
Oh my God.
Like
oh
a water God. Hose.
Yes.
Fire hose, here we come.
Here we come. But,
yeah, I think that you know what you want to do is you want to, you know, do some healing inside your own heart. If you're in a hurry, you listen, it feels like, you know, I've had women tell me, you know, I just feel like nobody's ever going to love me and I'm getting older and I'm never going to find that right person. Yeah. And I often tell them, if you took, you know, just way of illustration, it might take you 6 months to work through or a year to work through some inner healing, but it will take a lot less time than it would if you get into a relationship too quickly and you get hurt and damaged over the next 5 years, and then you've got to heal from that. That's going to be a much longer journey.
It really is.
So it's better to do that internal work in your own heart now and get through that so that you know who you are, so you can describe yourself like Suzette described herself. And then you can, you'll see it'll come very quick. It can come very quick. And by the way, the healthier we get, the more we recognize unhealth in others.
Yes.
Like it's, you know, when Secret Service is looking for counterfeit money, they don't study counterfeit. They teach them what the real looks like and they study it so that when they see what's not real, then they'll recognize it. Mm-hmm. And so you want to study what your heart, the authentic parts of your heart, the really what's going on deep inside. And the more you do that, and the more you understand that, the quicker you're going to be able to see false. When you know truth, you're going to see the false pretty quickly. And I always say, don't fake it till you make it. Declare it till you believe it.
Yes. That's another moment.
There it is. Declare it till you believe it. Don't fake it till you make it. Be real. I don't even have a problem if you say to somebody, you know what? I have chosen to be a fierce, strong woman, and you are on the inside are still feeling like you're not fierce or strong. Then say like, I'm moving towards being a fierce and strong woman, and I'm declaring that over myself and until I believe it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, be honest with yourself. Be honest. You know, don't try, and I think too many self-help things try to get you to do all these things that aren't authentic. You got to be authentic. So it's okay to say, hey, I am a fierce, authentic woman. It's kind of like there's this little verse in the Bible that says, I believe, but help me with my unbelief.
Yes. And I'm kind of like that. Yes,
in this conversation. I believe I'm a fierce, valuable woman that is worth loving. Help me with the pieces that I don't believe that.
Yeah.
So be authentic, but declare it. If you know, I always say you speak out of your spirit into your soul. So when you declare things out loud, you know, even if you have like affirmations on your wall or whatever, they're nice. You can read them. That's good. But read them out loud. Let your spirit declare to your soul what you believe, what you want to believe.
And that's exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened. My spirit declared to my soul, you ain't going out like this.
That's it. And when you say that out loud and you hear yourself saying it, you begin to build the confidence that you need to believe it and to live that out. Oh, you know, I heard recently another word for faith or belief is trust. And if you can build trust in yourself because you value yourself, because you've declared it and you've declared it enough, you begin to believe it, you build that confidence, and you can trust in your decision making, that is faith. That is belief in yourself. Mm-hmm. When you start to see, that's why I said earlier, look at the fruit, look at where you're doing well and celebrate that and say, wow, I am killing it there. I'm doing really well. And it'll build that confidence and belief in yourself so that no one else can come along and devalue you. You see, other people's opinions does not devalue you, doesn't make you, doesn't change your value.
Indeed.
Only if you believe what they're saying does it change your value. So you either believe truth or you believe the lie.
And that is so true. Oh my God.
In my life, as soon as I started believing the truth, I started changing. We are going to overcome because the truth sets you free.
The truth sets you free. Listeners, what I want you to do is I want you to either send me an email, or I want you to find Mark. He's going to tell us where to find him. And I want you to tell him what your declaration of truth is. I want to know what your declaration of truth, not what somebody else told you, but what comes up. What does your spirit say to your soul? I want to hear it. I want to hear about it. So, Mark, I knew this conversation was going to be great. I knew it. And your genuineness is so refreshing, and your honesty. So as we bring our conversation to a close, what do you want? What final words do you want to leave with our listeners? What do you want their takeaway to be from our
I want their takeaway to be that they are so valuable that they are worth fighting for. And they can start. I want to encourage you to start fighting for yourself because you are so valuable and you deserve the best. You were created wonderfully made. You were fearfully and wonderfully made, and you were created with so much power, so much love. You were literally created for love. And so you deserve to discover that value. So fight for yourself to believe that you are valuable because you're created in the very image of God.
The very image. Oh, that's wonderful. Now, Mark, how can they reach out to you?
Well, my website is markgordon.ca. And off there, you'll see my social media. You can click on any of my social media buttons and like my Facebook page or find me on LinkedIn. But it all starts with the website. So markgordon.ca.
All right, listeners, I want you to blow Mark up. Tell him how much you enjoyed this episode. I want you to tell me what you got. Tell him what those declarations are. That was powerful. Okay, everybody. Thanks for listening. And until next time, regardless of what things look like, Don't you ever, ever doubt that you are worthy, you are worth it. You are more than enough. Bye. You have just listened to the Enough Factor Podcast with your host, Suzette Vernon. To get notified of new episodes or to dig deeper into today's topic, become a subscriber. And while you're at it, tell us how we're doing and what topics you're interested in. We appreciate your feedback and your reviews. Until next time, remember, you are worthy, you are worth it, you are enough.